Yo, what is up, chumps? Welcome back to the one and only, some would say partially undefeated, Fantasy Chumps. I don't know who that would be, but joining me, just one having on the program, the two blondies here. John is a little preoccupied. He's okay. He went 1-3 this week, so that's why I can't make the podcast. So, Nate, how did you end up doing in all your leagues?
Oh, I actually don't have a tally for you. I should have done this. I think
it's okay.
I'm in 14 leagues.
How many are standard redraft?
Standard redraft is I have 9. So it's a 8-6 split of redraft to dynasty.
You're in 6 dynasty
leagues? That's not true. I'm in 4 dynasty leagues, 2 vampire leagues. So it's basically like 8 redraft, 4 dynasty, and 2 kind of off the wall type leagues. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I don't.
I think I went about 500. I think I went 7-7 or maybe 8-6, but it was fine. Unfortunately, lost in our league of record, which is, it's always the one that I like. I'm checking it first. It's probably the league of record team.
Did you see who you lost to?
I did see who I lost to.
Who'd you lose to?
Our great friend Scott Wickmer pulled it out. He had a pretty good week.
But why did he win?
Tyreek Hill.
Because he had Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Hill punished me. You know what?
He did.
It's honestly, it was great. I don't even think I've told you this yet. I was out of town this last weekend on a golf trip with.
You were gone. Didn't respond to any text.
Yeah, I was up near like a couple hours south of Chicago, and it's actually the town where my grandparents lived. But I was up there, just like middle of nowhere, Midwest. But got to play a lot of golf for super cheap. Met some like college buddies I hadn't seen in a while up there. But so Sunday we were actually playing 36 hole golf, and I didn't watch any of the games on Sunday. Like, didn't watch a single game. I was trying to put my iPad in the golf cart. I was with Connor, and we were trying to throw the iPad up and watch games, and it kind of wasn't really working. My iPad ran out of charge quick, but I briefly caught the beginning of the Vikings game and the beginning of the Raiders-Broncos game. That was it, though. I had no idea Tyreek Hill dropped a 40 burger on the clubhouse after the last round.
You know, it's brutal for the program, but that's okay.
Yeah, if it was going to happen, let it be on a weekend where I'm not even watching football. Kind of stunk that missed all of week one, but still had a great time seeing those guys, and even more excited for week two now.
Dude, it was such a good weekend for fantasy. So I only included the redraft leagues for my tally. So I did go 4-0 over the weekend.
Ooh.
Great feeling. And I know it's only week one. Probably won't mean anything. I did score the most amount of points. And I didn't have the Cowboys defense or Tyreek Hill. I actually played against the Cowboys defense. I was up by maybe 60 points, and then the Cowboys defense happened, and I was like, I was playing Josh Allen left, and I was like, hold on, I could like lose. And then Josh Allen, you know, did Josh Allen thing.
Like Tyreek Hill definitely like put up the most fantasy points in week one. Where did the Cowboys rank in that? Were they top 5?
The Cowboys defense?
Yeah.
They were Cowboys definitely defense. Top 5. Yeah.
Top 3? I can't think of any other like 30 pointers out there, really.
Here, let's see.
In a PPR format, like.
So how many did they have? 35?
It was, I mean, I thought it was like 32, 35 maybe.
Hang on. I have it right here. So at least on ESPN, might be different with what you're doing, is 35 fantasy points.
Okay.
Brandon Ayuk had 32.9, who was the second wide receiver after Tyreek Hill. No running back touched it.
No.
No quarterback touched it. We don't even need to look, but I did anyway. No tight end touched it. Second highest scoring player was the Dallas Cowboys defense.
Wow.
Honestly, defenses kind of went off this week.
They really did.
Cowboys had 37, Jets had 20, Cardinals had 19, Packers had 15. Like, that's pretty incredible.
A lot of turnovers, a lot of defensive scores. I mean, week one's always pretty sloppy. I feel like we touched on this in some podcasts leading up to the start of the season, but with this new trend of like starters not playing in the preseason at all, it kind of favors defenses in week one. Just I feel like offense is like it's so dependent on like the rhythm and timing of everything that it's defenses are probably going to start out a little bit faster. Offense hasn't really meshed together and got like the actual game time reps in yet. So, I mean, yeah, week one defenses, I feel like this has been going on for a couple years where they're kind of, they always kind of step up, but
just really blew up this week.
Yeah. Kind of tough when you're the one playing the team that goes for 35.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to hop into the news. Then we're going to have some fantasy reactions to week one. Not a ton reactive, if I'm being honest, outside of defenses. And then we're going to do some sleepers. We know waivers have gone already, so we try to go a little bit deeper for you guys. So we'll start off with the news here really quick. I always hate week one news, week one and two, because you just get the season enders and you don't even get a chance to watch them play. But you know who we really didn't get to see play? Aaron Rodgers, 4 snaps for the Jets, then tears his Achilles. I don't watch Hard Knocks, but man, was I excited to watch this team this year, if I'm being honest. Their defense, 3 picks and a fumble recovery, it's pretty amazing. Nate, were you watching the game live? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think this was probably the game of the week pretty easily. I think it was kind of must-watch TV for week one. Aaron Rodgers making his debut, going up against the in-state rivalry, Josh Allen, Bills. I mean, it was a big-time game, and I was really excited for it. Did watch Hard Knocks this year. Thought it was a pretty interesting storyline. I mean, it was – there was a ton of hype getting into this game. Being in New York, like Monday Night Football on 9/11, like it was a really cool sight, like a lot going on leading up to the game, which was really cool. And then just to like zap the energy out of the stadium like that when Rodgers goes down. I was super bummed, honestly. I mean, I know it doesn't really
– I'm still bummed.
It didn't hurt me at all, really, in like any of my fantasy leagues. I didn't have many Jets players. I'm not a Jets fan, so it was just like it didn't really pertain to me at all, but I was still like sad to see it because it was going to make the league better, honestly. Like the Jets being good is like it's kind of good for everybody, I feel like.
Especially having Aaron Rodgers playing, you never want to see a good player get hurt, but let alone a quarterback.
Right.
Just impacts the game a lot, but that, you know, they'll adjust. I think Zach Wilson looked good for what I was expecting, but it was kind of a gut punch because I have a coworker. He's a huge Jets fan, like as big a Chiefs fan as we are Jets fan. And he was so excited talking a little trash about how they're going to win the Super Bowl. And he's been a little quiet recently. So I feel bad for him. Shout out to Steven if you're listening. Ooh, but
I feel for him.
You have to downgrade every single Jet. Right.
No doubt. Okay. I mean, I think it just makes the ceiling for that offense so much lower and less dynamic.
Yeah.
I think if anybody's going to get maybe a bump, it's probably going to be the running backs that are just going to be seeing way more volume. But I think when you don't have the threat of like a Rodgers passing attack, the running game becomes maybe a little more predictable. So I think you're right. I think it's downgrade every single player on that offense, probably downgrade the running backs a little bit less than the wide receivers, though.
So quick question before we move on. Is there any player on the Jets you are actively trying to trade for with this negative news?
Breece Hall. I mean, I just reaction to that week one game. It was pretty clear that he was on a snap count for it. I mean, just it was a super rapid recovery back from the whatever tear he had last year. Really bad injury. Happened at kind of a later point in the season than you would expect to see somebody be ready to go the following season in week one. But he made it back and just looked awesome. Like, probably only had 10 to 12 rushing attempts, but I mean, I think he averaged like 11 yards per carry or something, or 9 or 10. I mean, it was insane. Every single time he touched the ball, he was making a play. He looked way better than Dalvin, I thought. Though Dalvin looked pretty good, had his moments.
True. So something to monitor. If you can, go for it. So next up, J.K. Dobbins tore his Achilles, out for the year. I feel really bad. He has not been healthy at all. And I was hearing some people say that this might honestly be like the end of his career. Like, who's going to give him a starting job after this? He'll probably get a nice backup gig, but it's just kind of brutal.
It's just bummer news, honestly. Reminds me of the he was actually just in the news like the other day. The old Bears running back,
Tariq Cohen.
Yeah, Tariq Cohen, who just could not catch a break, like injury wise. Like, always, it was every start of the season seemed like it was a season ending injury. Like, super sad for that guy. Kind of the same thing for Dobbins now. It's just like, I don't know how many more opportunities he's going to get.
Deontay Johnson, I don't want to say major, but appeared to be a major hamstring injury. Count on him being out for a while. If you're desperate at receiver, you can pick up Allen Robinson, who actually had a decent game. I know nobody's excited about doing that, so maybe turn elsewhere. Pat Freiermuth also left with a chest injury. Haven't seen the updates, but I think he should be okay. Maybe miss a week, but it wasn't anything super serious, I don't think. Darren Waller, Nate. I'm going to hang on to Darren Waller. Aaron Jones, a hamstring injury during the game, was pulled, didn't come back. Haven't heard anything. I think he didn't practice. I wouldn't count on him playing this upcoming week. I wouldn't start him, if I'm being honest. And AJ Dillon might be a good stream, but Nate, what do you do if you're an Aaron Jones fantasy owner?
I mean, you hope at this point in the season you drafted for depth. I mean, just expecting, like, you should always have at least three startable running backs, hopefully with different buys. So for whatever reason, you could plug them in, but at the very least should have three. You're only a week into the season. I would hope that you've got somebody that you can plug in, but I mean, it's just, I'm paying close attention to news. I don't really, didn't practice today. Is it Thursday practice? That's like the big tell if they're going
to
make it.
Tomorrow's the big one. So when you're listening to this, go check.
Definitely.
You'll know.
And I mean, if he's not practicing tomorrow, I would be trying to look elsewhere. Kind of a bummer, though. I mean, he looked so good in week one. He had RB1 finish, didn't he?
Actually, here. I have that right here.
I want to say that he did. I mean,
yes, he did.
He looked incredible.
Him, Austin Eckler, and Christian McCaffrey were top three. So,
interesting. Kind of a interesting storyline from week one was that Green Bay offense. It looked a lot more explosive than I think people thought it might.
That's definitely true. It was interesting. We'll see what happens. Here's hoping he can come back fully healthy and everything. Nate, this one's close to your heart. Do you just want to take this about Darren Waller?
Yeah. Darren Waller, I mean, it's the nagging hamstring injury that we've kind of become used to with him.
Woo.
This kind of popped up out of nowhere last week leading up to the game. I mean, anybody that had Darren Waller is already nervous, but you were kind of sitting around, and then I think it was Thursday or Friday rolls around, and you finally see the Q next to his name. You kind of wonder what it is. Hamstrings flaring up. It was going to be like a game time decision if he was going to play Sunday night or not. Ended up playing through it. Ended up looking pretty good. Probably one of the only semi-bright spots in that game for the Giants. Nothing really went right. Starters were pulled pretty quickly, too, into the second half when the game was completely out of reach. So didn't really get the most productive performance out of him, but I think he caught all of his targets, had a handful of yards, so it was okay. But it's sounding like this week that the hamstring could be a bit more serious than we originally thought, not just kind of a muscle thing, but might have a lot more to do with the nerving in the hamstring and in that leg. So definitely makes you nervous. Something to pay attention to, but probably a good time to start thinking about streaming another tight end if you can, kind of a high upside tight end. There's going to be a lot available right now, I'm sure of. Yeah. So we'll get into it later as we talk about some deep sleepers, but yeah, definitely. Tough news if you're a Darren Waller holder.
So Jacoby Myers, the wide receiver 4 on the week, got a concussion. Unsure if he's going to play. We'll talk more about him later, but he looked very good. Mm-hmm. So kind of some minor ones. Anthony Richardson got hurt. Coach Shane Steichen said he is fine and good to go now. So hopefully we avoided the scare there. Jack Conklin, sorry. Right tackle for the Browns, out for the season, torn ACL, MCL. I wanted to highlight this because I would give the Nick Chubb owners and maybe even the Browns in general just a slight downgrade. You know, nothing to panic about or anything, but I could definitely see this maybe harming Nick Chubb in a little bit of a way, but nothing too crazy. Travis Kelce is trending towards playing, according to himself, on New Heights. He says he feels good. He's hoping to get out there. So he might. I would not. If I was, I know he wants to play, but I want to win a Super Bowl. Or the Chiefs want to win a Super Bowl. I want to win a Super Bowl. You know, let's go back to back.
Yeah, I know. Awesome. I think even if you're a fantasy holder too, it's, I mean, you play week to week. You want to win every matchup you can. If you have Kelce, you're probably hoping he plays this week. I think it's watch tomorrow. I think this is truly going to be a game time decision to see if he's feeling really good. You know, Saturday evening, Sunday morning. If he's playing and if he's activated, I'm definitely playing him.
If you have Kelce, you don't have TJ Hockenson or Goddard that you have to worry about Thursday night, mm-hmm. probably when you're listening to this. So
accurate. That's a very good point.
If you have, hang on, I'm going to throw a theoretical. If you have Travis Kelce and you picked up Gerald Everett off waivers,
mm-hmm.
who are you starting?
No, I'm starting Kelce still. I think the thing, it's like in the NFL, when these guys are questionable and going to be a game time decision, whatever that means, they're not getting played unless they're like 95% or better good to go. Like, I feel like there are guys that are like, or 90%, it's like, hey, I'm great. It's like, I feel about as good as I possibly can. I'm just like not quite there. I feel like there's a lot of instances where teams shut somebody down just for fear of, you know, making an injury worse, even though they feel like they're good. They say they're good. Like, especially for somebody like Kelce this early in the season, if he's playing, he's good, I would say. Like, the team feels comfortable playing him. He feels comfortable playing. So I think fantasy managers should feel good playing him.
I agree. Okay, moving on to our next segment, fantasy reactions to week one. Nate, I'm going to let you start off with, you want to talk about the Falcons a little bit.
I did want to talk about the Falcons. I thought the Falcons, it was an interesting game for them. I mean, they were control the entire game, ended up winning 24-10. It was not that pretty, though, especially in the passing game for Atlanta. I think what you'll take away from this is how good the rushing attack looked, especially with Bijan Robinson making plays out of the backfield. And in the receiving game, he had a really sweet receiving touchdown down in the red zone, made a guy miss, made another guy miss, took it into the house. That was really cool. He ended up running for 55 yards and had 27 receiving yards. So pretty productive day for him. But Tyler Allgeier kind of stole the show as well. He had more carries out of the backfield, 75 yards and 2 touchdowns. Both these guys are top 10 running backs in week one. So running game looked really good. What did not, Desmond Ritter. Although his passer rating was 111. So his passer rating was really solid. He was 15 for 18. But there was a point in the game when he had completed like 9 of 10 passes for like 23 yards or something. Like he was not taking many shots down the field. Definitely in a game manager type role, I feel like, playing quarterback for Atlanta right now. And it's tough if you are a Drake London or Kyle Pitts holder. I think you want to see, especially if you're Kyle Pitts, I think you just want to see his potential utilized. And it's just not there. He's not getting that many opportunities. He only had 2 receptions on 3 targets.
I was gonna say this is part of the reason why I was just avoiding both these players. Drake London played 90% of snaps and had 1 target.
Yep. No catches.
He didn't catch it. It probably wasn't catchable. And Kyle Pitts had 62% snap, and like Nate said, 3 targets, 2 catches. I know they won. I don't know how Drake London could be okay with this. Like, I would just be so frustrated to get 1 target. Drake London's a good football player. I wish the Chiefs had him. Heck, let's send Sky Moore for Drake London. But I don't know. Maybe this is just the rest of career with the Falcons thing. But when he's going for a new contract, he's going to want to get paid. And if he only catches 50 balls this year, nobody's going to pay him because of that. So I don't know. Sorry.
So I guess what I was wanting to know is, do you think these fears are justified and are going to continue on through the season? Or do you think this was a game script type deal that led to the receivers not seeing much work?
So,
and what I mean by that is the Falcons kind of took an early lead. It was actually tied going into the half. Tied still going in after the third. And it was the fourth quarter was when they kind of pulled away.
So no,
got an early touchdown in the fourth, but it seemed like they were just fine running the ball, running their offense through the ground attack, not really trusting the receivers. Do you think as they continue to play, maybe get behind in some games where they got to air it out, do you think that will happen, or do you think they continue to lean on the run game in those instances?
I think they'll always continue to lean on the run game.
Yeah.
Now, if they're getting blown out, for example, they might, or if they're losing consistently, maybe more of a pass, I think they could, but don't count on either of these guys. They have to prove it to you. Both of these guys are going to be, they're so talented, you play them, and then you eventually get annoyed after like 3 or 4 weeks, you sit them. And then like week 5, Drake London will have 4 catches for 50 yards and a touchdown. And you'll be annoyed. And then you'll play him the next week, and it'll be back to normal. So don't start them.
That's tough. That's so brutal for I think anybody that owns Kyle Pitts. He's just a prototype tight end. And there's film out there on Twitter floating around with him just dicing people up on routes, creating like eight yards of separation, just like leaving him on the ground, and he's not even getting targeted. So that's too bad. But that's my fear as well, is that that might be a season-long trend for them.
Okay, I want to talk about my starting wide receiver in my Dynasty League now, Puka Nuka. 15 targets.
Puka, is it Puka Nuka or Puka Nakua? I like Puka Nuka.
I like Puka Nuka. It's probably Nakua, though, if I'm being honest. We'll go with Nakua because it sounds right. He had 15 targets. He's a rookie. 15 targets, 10 catches for 119 yards. Obviously, that's good for 21.9 fantasy points. Wow. He's a rookie. Nobody even knew this guy was drafted. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
So I picked him up in in our Dynasty League, like I said. But this guy, nobody was expecting anything. He was a fifth-round draft pick out of BYU, played 2 years at Washington, transferred to BYU, taken in the fifth round. And everybody said all year, you know, past Cooper Kupp, don't really know what you're getting into. You know, maybe Van Jefferson, maybe
Tutu Atwell.
Tutu Atwell. Tyler, yeah. There's another receiver. It doesn't matter. But and then Puka Nakua comes out of nowhere. Oh, DeMarcus Robinson. He's on the Rams. But the fact that Matt Stafford in his first game targeted him 15 times, Nate, just quickly, do you think he still will have relevance when Cooper Kupp comes back?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Cooper Kupp was that guy for Matt Stafford. It was just you get the snap, you're looking at Cooper Kupp, and you just like bank on him being open and throw it up to him, and just kind of it's probably like a 70-30 chance that he's going to come away with it. Puka Nakua, I mean, I actually did not watch this game, but saw some highlights. He was just kind of finding the soft spots, and Stafford was looking his way every single time, getting it to him. And he would, you know, he'd just fall up field, get, you know, it was like 10 yards every single play.
It worked.
So just having that safety valve for Matt Stafford, who's not a mobile quarterback and can't extend the play, just having somebody that's, you know, within the sticks, can get the ball and get upfield quick, I feel like is going to be like that's Matt Stafford's best friend right now in that offense. So I do think when Cooper Kupp comes back, assuming that Cooper Kupp's going to be 100% when he comes back, I still think Puka will have Puka Nakua. I believe he will have a pretty substantial role in the offense at that point.
I agree. I will not discredit that. Moving on, I'll touch on him quickly because we mentioned him already. Jacoby Myers, Nate, is he the wide receiver one in Vegas if he's healthy?
No, he's not the wide receiver one in Vegas.
But
what's your argument?
All right, fine. I'm going to go into this just real quick. I'll try to keep it brief because it's ridiculous. He had 10 targets on 80% of snaps with 9 catches, 81 yards, and 2 touchdowns, right? Devontae Adams played 90% of snaps with 9 targets, only 6 catches for 66 yards. The main reason I brought it up is because Jacoby Myers was the first guy the Raiders signed in the offseason. They gave him a lot more money than everybody was expecting. You know, nothing earth-shattering. When they already had Devontae Adams and they have, I can't remember his name, Hunter Renfrow. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, there's no way they're signing anybody else. Well, Hunter Renfrow played 22% of snaps. And he is basically non-playable. So I think Jakobi Meyers could be a solid like wide receiver two or flex option for your fantasy teams this year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, as a wide receiver two or flex, I think he's a pretty safe guy. I mean, he was always one of my favorite but also most frustrating players when he was in New England I felt like he was really talented, but just kind of he was just not utilized properly in New England. He's not wide receiver one in Vegas, I don't think. You have a guy named Devontae Adams. Devontae Adams was wide receiver two or three last year. So it's hard to argue that Adams is out of his prime yet. I mean, I do think Devontae Adams is still in his prime.
Yeah.
Denver's also a tough matchup. I mean, I think Denver probably gave a lot of attention to Adams, and Jakobi Meyers was the one taking advantage of, you know, some soft coverages and whatnot. But
won't teams do that every week, though?
Possibly. Not when you know that Jakobi Meyers can go for whatever it was. I actually don't have the stats pulled up in front of me.
But it's okay. I do.
I think that
even 81 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think that'll eventually spread out. The attention will get probably shifted more equally players, and I think Devontae Adams will. He'll be the one to kind of come through as the top option there.
No, you're
like if I'm seeing this, if I own Devontae Adams, I'm like thrilled. I think now that I have a Jakobi Meyers in the offense to take some of the attention away from Devontae.
That's true. Nate, you want to touch on the slow start for the upper tier running backs?
Yeah, it was just something I had
almost all of them
noticed. It was a pretty slow week for running backs across the board. Like we mentioned, CMC, Aaron Jones, and who was the last one?
I believe
one?
In you. Austin Eckler.
Austin Eckler, yep.
Tony Pollard was good.
Tony Pollard was solid also. Probably if that game was even remotely competitive, he would have had an RB1 performance. But the big name running backs that did not really live up to their projections or the hype was Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Najee Harris. I mean, this was just something I wanted to touch on. I don't think there's anything to fear with any of these running backs besides Najee Harris. I'm a little bit concerned with Najee right now. I think one of the pieces of the roster that the Steelers wanted to address this offseason was the O-line. Seemed like that they had confidence that they had improved it. That did not look the case against San Francisco. And that's probably the top defensive line in the NFL. Tough matchup for anybody that's going against them. But, I mean, they were kind of a wet paper towel. And San Francisco just kind of asserted their dominance on them the entire game. And Najee quickly kind of got cut out of that offense. I think he only had a handful of rushing attempts. Didn't get anywhere on those opportunities. I'm a little worried about it. I mean, that was kind of what happened last year was they had to kind of abandon the run game because it was ineffective in a lot of matchups. So, I mean, that's something to keep my eye on. I'm not sure right now what to do with Najee, and I'm not sure if I'm wanting to actually plug him into my starting lineup week two even.
So if you want to ask me, I would go trade for him immediately if somebody's just out. Because he only played 50% of the snaps. Like you said, the game script was not in his favor.
Mm-hmm.
And on his 6 rushing attempts, he had 31 yards. Not a ton, but that is 5.17 yards a carry.
Pretty solid.
So that's pretty good. And he did have 2 targets with 2 catches. So just the fact he got some targets with being that low percentage of the snaps, I thought was good. I would go kick the tires because who do they play next? They play the Browns. Well, they look pretty good. But if I will say this, if the Browns don't play good, or if Najee doesn't play good against the Browns again, you have to go trade for him. Next up after that, the Raiders, the Texans, and the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy. Oh boy. That would be nice. So I get where you're coming from, but I'd really be interested.
Definitely,
to see
definitely happens. A buy low candidate, potentially after yes. this week, which I do like. I think he's just, he's a talented player. I think if you could pawn off, like if you held, I'm trying to think of like a starting running back that maybe could have like a deceivingly good first 2 weeks compared to Najee, and then could definitely drop off as the season goes on. I'm thinking like Rashad White potentially, thinking Miles Sanders potentially, Alexander Mattison, like guys like that. If they continue to, stack solid weeks after each other, and Najee kind of
could be
peters out week two again. I think if you can get a trade like that done, like an Alexander Mattison for Najee, I think that's a home run. You're getting a much better player.
Problem is, in our league of record, John has him, so probably won't trade him. So.
Yeah. John's a smart player. We'll see. He's thinking the same thing we are.
All right. So kind of moving on, we won't take too much time because we've gone a little longer, but let's talk about some sleepers. So you guys have already done your waivers. Nate and I tried to come up with a few players who you probably wouldn't have drafted. Well, you definitely didn't draft, but people you wouldn't have picked up this past week. So I'll start. My first player is Gus Edwards. So the reason I want to highlight Gus Edwards, obviously, as we touched on earlier, J.K. Dobbins had tore his Achilles. He's done for the year, unfortunately. Everybody is clamoring for Justice Hill. Is his first name right?
Yeah,
Justice Hill. He played 30% of the snaps, whereas Gus Edwards played 23% of the snaps. So pretty close. And everybody wants Justice Hill because he had 2 touchdowns, right? He had a lot of fantasy points. You know, he had 13 fantasy points, basically just 2 touchdowns. He had 8 rushing attempts. Do you know how many yards he had? He had 9 on those 8 rushing attempts. And 2 of them obviously had to be more than 1 yard to gain a touchdown. So he had some negative yards, whereas Gus Edwards had 8 rushing attempts for 32 yards. So he was running him off 4 yards a carry. And I know they paid Gus Edwards a little bit of money. And just the fact that they were so close in the split of the carries after Dobbins went down, Dobbins was clear RB1. But what is also interesting to me is Gus Edwards was coming off of an injury last year. So they probably didn't want to, you know, lose their starting running back and then throw their guy who, you know, maybe is still not back to complete 100%, right? Mm-hmm. So my whole thing about Gus Edwards, you're not going to plug and start him, right? But if you have an open bench spot, as everybody throws all their fab or places all their waiver claims on Justice Hill, throw one on Gus Edwards. It might turn out to be the better play. And he was the goal line back a lot last year too. Or not last year, in 2021. But he's a bigger guy, so I think he could do it. No, it was 2020. My bad. He had 6 touchdowns in 2020. So in 2021 is when he got hurt. So just something to keep in mind. I'm keeping him in mind in a lot of my leagues, but we'll see what happens. Nate.
I think that is a great insight. So I'm going to go to tight end position. One of the guys that I'm going to highlight is probably available in most leagues. In Sleeper right now, he's rostered in 14, only starting in 3% of leagues. But it's Zach Ertz, name everybody's pretty familiar with. Very veteran guy in Arizona. He is tight end 12 on the season. He had 8 fantasy points last week.
But you have to describe how he got the 8 points.
Yeah. So nice thing about him was I think we were not totally sure who was going to get the bulk of the snap share in Arizona between Zach Ertz and the recently drafted tight end Trey McBride. Zach Ertz had 77% of the snaps here in week one. Trey McBride only 37. So Zach Ertz got 10 targets in week one, hauled six of those in for 21 yards, a whopping 2.1 yards per target. So, I mean, I think everybody knew that that offense in Arizona was going to look pretty
rough,
brutal. Yeah, for the first couple weeks. But I think just seeing the target share going to Zach Ertz is really nice. Nice to see that he's getting the majority of the snap share. I don't think he's a super high upside play as a tight end. I think he's a wonderful red zone target. I just don't know how many opportunities the Cardinals are going to have in the red zone. So if you can get the Cardinals, you know, matched up maybe against some weaker defensive teams, I think it's pretty safe to think that he could get 5+ receptions every week and possibly haul in a touchdown, which gets you well over 10 points. So that's kind of why I like Zach Ertz right now. Should be available in just about every league, but kind of keep your eye on him if you're needing a tight end flyer.
So one of the reasons why I like him a lot is obviously, like you said, Nate, he played 77% of the snaps. He had double the targets as Hollywood Brown, who everybody thought was the wide receiver one, including myself, or the number one target coming in the season. Do I think Zach Ertz will have more targets at the course of the season than him? Probably not. But the fact that he already has 10, that's a lot. And yes, he only got 21 yards on six catches, but do we really think he's going to go for 2.1 yards a catch? Probably not. Or sorry, 3.5. I was looking at yards per target. No, he'll probably be closer to the line of scrimmage, over the middle of the field. When you have Joshua Dobbs and Clayton Tune as your quarterbacks, that's kind of where you get a little, I guess, shaky. But the one thing I like about him is, so he did fine with 8 points. They have the Giants this week. The next 2 weeks after, Cowboys 49ers, right? Horrible matchups. You don't want to really play them. But what you can do is you can keep on your bench, because hopefully after week four, Kyler Murray comes back. And then maybe you have a really good target right there. So something to look into. I would definitely – he's my top streaming option this week because – I don't have a really solid tight end in most of my leagues, so I'm going to throw him out there, because if he gets 10 targets again, I will roll the dice on that compared to Chigga Conquo, who got zero catches. So
yeah, I think the just target preference for Zach Ertz is really attractive compared to probably most tight ends that are going to be available on waiver wires who are so touchdown dependent. So, I mean, that's been Zach Ertz's kind of MO his whole career is – you know, being a almost between the 20s type receiver. He's not utilized just for red zone opportunities or power packages. He's a great receiving option everywhere he's been. So, kind of a good one. But who's your next guy, Layton?
So my next guy, I was actually kind of high on him coming into the season, shockingly. But you know who everybody talked about besides Justin Jefferson on the Vikings this past week? It's Jordan Addison. He was very good, 16 fantasy points, 4 catches for 61 yards and a touchdown. The touchdown was kind of a broken play, but he was only out there for 56% of the snaps. And if I told you that KJ Osborne was out there for 91% of the snaps, had the same amount of targets, had one less catch, but had 3 catches for 31 yards. This is a deep sleeper, right? I'm not saying KJ Osborne's going to win you your fantasy league, but he's in a contract year, and it doesn't look like so far that the Vikings will – I think they'll be in a pass-heavy scheme more often than not. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
So just to have another piece of that offense, especially in 12-team-plus leagues, I think could be a real steal for you on your bench. And if something happens, knock on wood, with Jordan Addison or Justin Jefferson, KJ Osborne becomes immensely more valuable. So that's just more of a roster stash in deeper leagues, but I just wanted to put it on the radar for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. 91% snatcher. That was kind of shocking.
It obviously, because like obviously Justin Jefferson is going to be the guy, right? He's out there 98% of the time, but 91% with the same amount of targets as Addison kind of surprised me. So it just perked my ears a little bit, let me say.
I'm trying to think, like, for this to be kind of, I mean, this is definitely, like you said, this is a deep sleeper flyer. Mm-hmm. Right now, he's probably the fourth target in Minnesota right now. Do you think that's fair? Like, I feel like for this to be like a league-winning move, you need some help from maybe one of those guys going down for this to like really become like a valuable pickup.
Yeah.
Wanted that. And yeah, I think that's interesting. It'll be something we'll want to track to see if that snap share kind of goes towards Jordan Addison as we move along. But would you spend, if you're in a fab waiver league, how much fab would you be spending on KJ Osborne?
Zero.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking.
Nobody else will be there.
Right. All right. So my next guy is we're returning to the tight end position. And this is a little less of a deep sleeper as he was probably drafted in a lot of redraft
leagues.
I like
leagues. How we're going from this to him.
But my guy is Dalton Kincaid, the rookie tight end in Buffalo. But let me find this real quick. Dalton Kincaid in ESPN, he's rostered actually in 62% of leagues. But he is also splitting some time with Dawson Knox, who's there. He's the tight end one technically in Buffalo. But what was really interesting was what we saw on Monday was Buffalo using a lot of two tight end sets.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah, interestingly, Dalton Kincaid actually had an 80% snap share in week one with Dawson Knox having an 84% snap share. So they were on the field in pretty much every set. But Kincaid, he had an okay game, pretty quiet. He had four targets, hauled all of them in. So not super explosive, but I thought he looked okay, moved really well, thought out contact. So I feel like he's more of a George Kittle type receiver when he's going for yards after the catch, just kind of running through people, but really quick out of his breaks. I mean, he went first round for a reason. Buffalo really liked him. I think they're going to want to use him as a weapon. I think what we saw is Gabe Davis just not really coming through. He had one big explosive play, but it's pretty clear he hasn't taken that step like everybody was kind of expecting or hoping that he would take. So I think that second receiving option in Buffalo is kind of up for grabs. And that's probably a top five passing offense in the NFL when Josh Allen can get the ball to the right team. But I digress. I like Dalton Kincaid, not to be confused with Dawson Knox, a lot. Unfortunately, you're probably going to have to trade for him. I highly doubt that many people are starting Dalton Kincaid, and you're
probably not.
So it's probably like a tight end two that's on the bench. I think if you could go grab him, sending just, you know, a semi-decent bench piece possibly to the person that owns him, I feel like you could probably get the deal done. But yeah, somebody to definitely keep your eye on.
I agree. I like him too. So moving on, my last one. This one might have been my most surprising observation from the weekend that I haven't heard a single soul talk about. Joshua Kelly. He looked good. It's his fourth year in the league, contract year. Didn't realize that. But he played 48% of the snaps. You know, Osako played 51. He had 16 carries for 91 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
5.6 yards a carry. He only had one target. That's not going to be his game like Austin Eckler. But the thing is, he's 25. Austin Eckler's 28, about to turn 29. Austin Eckler's questionable. Missed practice on Wednesday. He's only getting older, and it's the last year of his contract. Not saying, you know, this, it's only week two, so not saying they're thinking this deep. But, you know, Joshua Kelly's fighting to get paid too, just like Austin Eckler. People just talk about Austin Eckler more because he's Austin Eckler. Really good. But if the snap share splits out 60-40, or like this week it was 50-50, that's really good. And Kellen Moore made these guys look a lot better. Like I said, Austin Eckler had over 7 yards of carry against the Dolphins. That's insane. And so if you can get Joshua Kelly just as a bench play, because if Austin Eckler doesn't play, you're starting Joshua Kelly. Mm-hmm. Like, you just have to. So that's definitely one of those names to keep an eye on. I would personally add him, to kind of answer your question, Nate, how much fat would I spend on him? I don't know if anybody else is picking him up, but he's the wide receiver or the running back 12 on the week. Like two. Mm-hmm. Is anybody else putting more than that on him? I doubt it, but
I don't think he should. And if anybody's willing to, I think you let him have Josh Kelly.
Yeah.
And it's probably
for the best.
I mean, odds are is you can see Austin Eckler start this week and Josh Kelly not have a big game and they drop him right after that.
Exactly. So
I think, yeah. Just go kind of low with it, and if you got him, hold on to him for a couple weeks and kind of see what happens with Eckler's health.
Exactly. Well, we've run long, but let's finish this out really quick with the one and only lock of the week.
Yes, sir. Hey, all right, so let's recap last week real quick. Chumps went 3-0. Everybody won their lock of the week.
Let's giddy.
Very good. Good picking by everybody. Layton, your lock of the week was the Falcons minus. Did you have them at -3 or -3.5?
-3.5.
Didn't really matter. It was a 14-point game, but Falcons, that was a great one. Layton got it done there. John had the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think at -5 when we kind of locked these in. That one covered. Got a little hairy towards the end. Looked like,
but it worked out.
Indianapolis definitely could have scored before time ran out, but didn't convert a fourth down with a goal to go. Jacksonville covered. I had the Browns +2 at home against the Bengals.
2.5.
That was never in doubt. That game was the Browns the entire way. So Layton and I are giving you our locks for this week. After a little bit of consideration, there's actually a lot of games that I like this week, but the lock of the week is the Titans +3 at home versus the LA Chargers. And reasoning for this is Titans last week, they looked terrible. Tannehill threw 3 interceptions.
Could have been worse.
Derrick Henry didn't look that great. It was a disaster. But they lost by 1 point on the road at New Orleans. I do not expect Tannehill to be as bad as he was last week. I think he's probably good for at least one interception. But I think it's pretty – I think he will absolutely bounce back from last week's lackluster performance. I think if the Titans can put up, you know, 21 to 27 points, I think they're absolutely going to be in this game. I think it's hard to think that the Chargers can put up more than 27 against the Titans. I just think the Titans defense is too good. Vrabel's too good of a coach. They're going to be in just about every single game. I think the Titans bounce back, and getting 3 at home, that just seems way overdone. I think their people are a little too bullish on the Chargers right now. After their shootout against the Dolphins last week, I think that's kind of a phony line. So there is my lock. Layton, what do you got?
So I guess I went with a different, approach maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think the Panthers are good at all this year. And I think the Saints also didn't play very good. So I'm taking the Saints -3 on the road against the Panthers. I think the Saints clearly have the better quarterback, the better weapons, the better defense. I don't know really anything that the Panthers have better than the Saints. So
yep.
Maybe coach, but other than that, I just don't think it's close. I honestly thought this line would be bigger, which is why I'm taking it. The Saints, I could see them only winning by a field goal, but I'll run that risk because their offense looked a little choppy. I think they'll clean that up. So we'll go with Saints -3.
Yep. I like that one. We took that in a money line for a little parlay, but yeah, I think the Saints -3 is a really good pick. I would 100% agree with you. They're better in all phases of the game compared to the Panthers.
Nate, I'm sorry. Did your light just die?
Yeah, my laptop just died. We're going dark on the Zoom.
All right, if you're still listening, we're going till our lights go out. So join us again next week. Follow us on X at @fantasy_chumps. And good luck this weekend. Share with some friends because the chumps are off to a hot start. So come follow and listen, and we'll help you win a championship just like we helped somebody win last year.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, good luck this weekend, everybody.
It was fun. Thanks, guys.